If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we are talking about gender nonconformity with our guest, Tate Ashley,
woo!
Who is a writer, artist, professional dom, and cuddlist.
These are all true.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So to start off, we usually like to have our guests give their own intro, because I feel like you'll do a better job describing you than I will.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, I might. You pretty much laid out the basics there.
Well, can you just tell us a little bit more about those things?
Yeah. Then? So what I do for a living is I'm a professional dominatrix and also a cuddlist. And
do those two things go together? Or are those
often,
two
yes.
Jobs?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I have a lot of clients who enjoy both aspects of that sort of touch therapy.
Right. Wow. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's, like, your main job. I know you do, like, a ton of other things. and then, also, you identify as genderqueer, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay, so that's kind of the main
topic
we're going to be talking about.
That makes sense. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. So we've talked about this on some recent episodes, actually.
It's kind of come to the forefront a bit more in this last year, I think.
Like, yeah.
Been in people's minds a lot more than ever before.
Mm-hmm. Gender, yeah. Just in general, but then also kind of these sort of questions of, like, what does that really mean? Like, mm-hmm. How are we being boxed in by, you know, trying to be like we think we should be as
yeah,
a
or
gender.
Yeah, use gender
whatever.
Binary language.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. So I guess to start out, you know, we're talking about gender nonconformity, but you identify as genderqueer.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us, like, what that means, right? I think for most people, queer is used to describe people who are not straight, right?
Yeah, which I am also one of them.
Yeah. So when you apply it to something else, like gender, what does that mean? Like, how does that all fit under the same queer umbrella?
So, for me and the things that I've read, queerness as a topic generally is meant to describe something that's not the norm and not the expected and is actually more of an anti, like, proclamation of who you are than points to anything specific about who you are.
So it's more of, like, a what you're not?
Yeah, okay. Which is really interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
So, like, I am not gender, I guess? So then a further conversation is warranted.
Right.
Yeah.
Because then what is gender?
That's a good fucking question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. I say it all the time.
We have the explicit.
We better be allowed.
The explicit tag on iTunes.
Okay, good. So what is gender? That was the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for me, it's something that I've been exploring for a few years now. Gender seems to be the way that other people think of you and your genitals when they look at you,
mm-hmm.
which is really insane.
Yeah.
So there's a differentiation, of course, between gender and sex.
Mm-hmm.
And sex is your sex organs, your hormones, your body, how it presents itself. And gender is how really you feel about yourself and how you want to present yourself to other people, even though presentation and self-identification have nothing to do with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously it's already very complex and we just scratched the surface.
Right. And then, so I guess my question though, so if queer is about more defining yourself by what you're not rather than what you are, and this is not your own definition, right? Like, this is stuff you've read from books.
The internet
like
is
that,
vast,
right?
Has lots of answers people who are confused.
Right. So I guess my question is, and this is something that I've heard debated in poly circles or whatever, and I'm just curious for you to weigh in on it, is, you know, is identifying as polyamorous being queer? And it's something where some people, when this comes up, are like, well, yeah, because it's about, like, we're not monogamy or we're not the sort of normal thing that's expected, right?
Yeah.
And then, usually, whoever in the group is genderqueer or bi or gay, it's like, fuck you, you're not queer, I'm mm-hmm. queer.
Huh.
And then it becomes this weird sort of in-group, out-group
identity
thing.
Identity politics is right? suicide, said a good friend of mine.
Wow.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah, identity politics are really intense, and I've accidentally gotten involved in them through my blogging when I proclaimed that I did not like feminism, which is attached to this, in
sure,
fact.
Right.
But
interesting.
As far as... Okay, so I'm going to back it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So being genderqueer essentially means that I don't desire to fit into either of the two boxes that we see as genders in our society.
Right.
And so taking that now to your question of, like, is being polyamorous queer... By that definition, I would say yes. But by the social definition of what people who identify as queer, like, sexually, as in the way those communities form, there is a lot of overlap with poly communities, with kink communities, etc. But I would say that that's not the defining factor of them being queer. The defining factor is, like, them being genderqueer or trans or bi or pansexual or whatever.
Right.
So... colloquially, I would say that being poly is not queer.
Right.
Although it's a pretty queer thing to do.
Yeah.
But you can be straight and poly.
That's true.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So right. then, are you not queer? I guess no.
That's...
I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all a tricky question.
It's tricky.
And I think that part of it that I feel like comes up is that queer, especially for people who identify as queer, there is... a certain sense of that identity having to do with the extent to which you are discriminated against or disenfranchised or something like that. And I
there's
think,
a lot of fighting over who has it worse.
Right. Yeah. And that's something we've talked about a little bit on this show before of like that we try hard to stay away from that of like, well, no, but I have it worse because of
it's
this discrimination,
helpful.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
it's not helpful.
No one's moving forward when we're focusing on how much we suffer, I guess.
Yeah.
But so it is interesting that all these things get mixed up together, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, like, it's all anti-norm. So in a way, all queer.
Right. But I guess what I mean is that the term queer gets mixed up with being disenfranchised, gets mixed up with being discriminated
it's
against.
Because
right?
it's a reclamation. The word queer itself used to be used
what's a negative?
As yeah. a very negative slur. And so now, by taking it back... there's a lot of contrast over other words that are being reclaimed as well.
Sure.
But that one seems to be pretty universally accepted. I mean, to the point where we have people studying queer theory.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's a legitimized thing at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
It's in academia now, so it's clearly legit. Yeah, no, it's fascinating to me how all of that's evolved and kind of where that... yeah, I don't know, kind of how that all fits together into all of this. Okay, I don't want to get us derailed on queer theory. We were talking about it before we recorded, so it's like, wait, let's talk about this more. You said that you wanted to talk a little bit about this idea of extremes versus the middle ground.
Yeah.
Tell
absolutely.
Us more about that.
So another word for gender queer or gender nonconforming is, as I'm sure you've heard, gender non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
And so that therefore makes us examine the binary that we think exists of like men and women, girls and boys, feminine, masculine, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually made a video that I still haven't published. I'm really sorry to everyone who worked on the video about expressing yourself beyond the binary. So like using whatever kind of clothes you want to wear in order to express yourself in a very like limited sense. That was the video it was about. But I've found in my daily life that when you're not desirous to fit into either box on either end of the extreme, male, female, girly, masculine, etc., like people have a harder time understanding it because if you think about it, we understand things by categorizing them and having names for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that actually rolls into something else I want to talk about, but I'll hold off. So when you are claiming middle ground, it's very confusing for people and they have a harder time, like, I don't know so much about desiring to understand, but they have a harder time understanding. For instance, it's much easier for someone to understand, like, oh, you're transgender, so you were this gender, and now you want to be this other gender. And I understand both of those genders, and so I can understand what you are doing.
Right.
But for someone like me, I'm floating in the middle. I don't care either way. I don't feel one or the other. I don't want to be something that I'm not.
Right.
And that's, I think, unsettling.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, it's hard when people can't categorize something. There is that, like, kind of safety in being like, well, yeah. I put a name on this, so I yeah. know what it is.
Exactly. Right? It's like a placeholder for a concept. And so I mm-hmm. wish that we had better words around mm-hmm. gender nonconformity, because I think that would make it a lot easier to understand for the majority of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. Do you have any suggestions
of- in terms of words?
Should we get to that?
Because once upon a time there was the Z, and mm-hmm. yeah, you had said that, which I know you
for
hate.
The record, mm-hmm. I think that's stupid.
Yeah.
I lived for a month with a friend of mine from high school and her roommate, and they both went by Z and here.
Yeah.
And so I like very quickly was like
figured it out.
Was like, you know, constantly having to be aware of my pronouns, yeah, which yeah. in itself is an interesting exercise when you become mm-hmm. aware of how often we use pronouns in
yes.
general.
All the frickin' time.
Right. Something I find really fascinating about the English language mm-hmm. is that in order to talk about another person, the one piece of information you need before anything else is their gender.
Yeah,
or their pronoun.
Yeah.
Right? That because we use them in every sentence, yeah. you either need to always refer to them by their name or know their pronoun.
Yeah.
And that we can't function without it.
And you can't know their pronoun unless you ask.
Right.
Yeah.
And so personally, I use they, them.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who's advocating for the use of more names and less pronouns, even though that does get repetitive. They, them is confusing. My mom said, that's a plural word. And I said, I realize.
Yeah. Thanks, Mom.
So I think, like, I personally wish and am constantly on the hunt for what can we use in, mm-hmm. as a gender-neutral pronoun in English? Because in some languages, it's easier.
Right.
In Swedish, my friend told me that they have han and hun for her and him, and then mm-hmm. hen is a middle ground.
Oh, right. Wow.
Which is
right.
so
fascinating.
Easy, and I wish we had something like that.
Yeah.
In Russian, there's a similar thing.
Really?
Where there's on and ana, and ano mm-hmm. is the neutral one,
great.
but it's never used for people. So in Russia, as we know from the news,
sure.
they're not
gonna
quick
be...
to adopt this,
no.
this term.
Yeah.
But it does at least exist, so
yeah,
when
exists.
They are ready to take that step,
they
it's like,
it.
Oh, we already have a word that means... Because for them, he and she also means it.
Yes.
Right? Because
yeah.
all of their
languages.
You know their tables are female and their computers are male. And you know, right? Like,
yeah.
they all have gender as well, which is a whole
other
thing.
Well, they
have
to know what things they can have sex with and what things they can't.
Right.
There
right.
you go.
And then there are also things that are neutral, right? So that's why yeah. they have that third pronoun.
Yeah.
Or in Japanese, where you don't use any pronouns at all most of the time.
Huh.
So same yeah. thing. Like, you can intentionally be vague about using pronouns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is
yeah,
interesting
cool.
how language affects that. And I
yeah.
know language is something you want to talk about, but I'm going to make you wait.
Ah!
We're going to get to that soon. While we're on this, though, like... okay, so, like, if there's these two boxes for male and female, and mm-hmm. we're talking about this existing in the middle ground,
mm-hmm.
is it something, like, is there... Is there a place outside of that box that's, like, on the other side of the box? Now I'm just, like, doing
oh,
a thought experiment.
Interesting.
Like, can you explain what...
So you've got your male box here,
mm-hmm.
and then your female box here.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hop out of those boxes and be mm-hmm. in the middle. Can you also hop out, like, on the other side
oh,
of the
like
box?
Oh, and be, like, hyper-masculine
You're talking about
or hyper-feminine?
Like, yeah, like, these boxes are existing in space and time, and then there's, like, a section in which each of them exists, and then you're, like, either in between or out of it. I don't know if that's exactly the case.
Well, I mean,
that's an interesting thought experiment.
In some ways, I think that's an apt metaphor, actually.
Hmm.
So I think not being hyper-masculine or anything like that, not putting mm-hmm. it on a, like, on a line, I think there are people who feel in between, mm-hmm. neither,
yeah.
all. There's a lot of different ways to be gender non-conforming.
Well, I mean, and I guess kind of what I'm getting at is... Is there not just, like, a place on opposite sides of the boxes? Like you said, it's not on a line. But it's like, well, maybe I'm next to this box, but, like, there are
oh, yeah.
parts of me that feel more like this box, but other parts of me that identify more here.
Hmm.
Right?
Think...
Like, there's this whole sort of three-dimensional
okay.
world around
Is that
boxes.
Not genderqueer, though?
It still is. It sounds like an analogy to bisexuality.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Sure, a little bit, yeah. I'm just thinking, like for me with... You know, when I went to college is when I started, when I was in high school is when I started questioning my sexuality,
mm-hmm.
but when I was in college is when I started questioning my gender. And me looking the way that I do and having, like, a voice like I do and all that, like, it's not, Like, you guys were both talking about people being like, sir, ma'am, no, like, not no. Like, everyone always is just like, sir, right? Like,
yeah, they, yeah.
I clearly present as a guy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could do something about that.
Well, sure, but so that's the debate I had in college was, like, I wore dresses for a little while and was like, okay, what's, you know, what's this about? Like, it was almost just to try things and kind of find, like, what...
Experimenting in college, who knew?
I know,
Who does that?
But kind of like, what's true for me? And it was this thing where, like, ever since I was young, I hated being grouped in with men. Like, if I ever, like, had an opinion or said something and someone was like, oh, it's because you're a guy, it, like, I was like, no, my opinions are my own. Like, my thoughts are my own. It's not just because I'm a guy, I think like every other guy or whatever. And so for me, then the question was this, like, well, what's the deal? Like, do I wish I was female? 'Cause sometimes I'm like, yeah, like I do identify with that a lot. But ultimately for me, it was kind of this like for me, it was about finding the things that I did like about being a man. But not like needing to fit in that box, I guess. But still understanding, like, aesthetically, like, there are things about being a guy that I like about myself, right? Like, I like looking in the mirror and seeing broad shoulders. I'm like, cool, like, I'm into that, right? Rather than that being something that I wanted to change, or like that I always wear stubble. It's like, yeah, just I kind of like how that looks. So, yeah. I don't know. I feel like I'm losing the thread a little bit, but just this idea of like,
cool. Yeah.
I feel like you're touching on transgenderism. Or transsexuality, specifically.
Transsexuality. Mm-hmm. Is that different from transgender?
Yeah.
Explain. Tell me more.
So, this is highly debated. It's not, like, by any means an academic definition. This is from people who I know telling me what it is.
Okay.
So, I have a friend who hangs out with a lot of women who are transsexuals, which means specifically that their goal is to change their bodies from being males to females.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of transgender people who want to be viewed as the opposite gender but have no desire to change their sexuality in terms of their physical body makeup.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so I see. So transsexual versus transgender. Okay,
right.
Got it.
But transsexual is suddenly not a PC term, even though it refers to something specific.
Well, because it used to be this sort of catch-all term for anyone who cross-dressed, who is a transvestite, right? So that's another term that's kind of fallen out of vogue.
Yeah.
Right, so it's transvestite, transgender, and transsexual, and they
were
all kind of grouped in together.
We have so many words for sexuality and gender.
We really do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and Evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store, and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy, or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, MULTI at AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping code MULTI.
Cool. Awesome. We're going to talk about language.
Yeah.
Yes.
And its inefficiency.
Yeah.
Super inefficient.
Yeah. I wanted to call it like language and its discontents for some reason. Huh. I don't know.
Language and its malcontents?
Yeah.
Well, right?
Speaking of malcontents.
No, exactly.
Tate, tell us about language.
Hardly.
I was thinking about something like I really didn't like being called bisexual for the longest time because, again, I didn't want to be placed into a box. Mm-hmm. And especially now, I mean, bisexual means like I like both men and women, but if I like someone who does not identify as that,
and she does,
maybe sitting in this chair next to me, then what does that make me?
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes you pansexual.
Oh, I'm pansexual. Yes.
Okay.
I like that more than just being two things. I get to be all things.
Right.
Enjoy in high school, things. I was bisexual.
Yes.
I was a bisexual girl, and that was really awkward for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then once I got out into the world and started meeting people and questioning my gender in college, like Jace.
Yeah. Nice.
Except for I don't think I lasted in college as long as you might have. I realized that I wasn't just attracted to men and women. I was attracted to trans people and genderqueer people and, you know, lots of things. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, one of my partners and I, we have truncated it to being pan-poly.
Pan-poly, there you go. I like that.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah,
I can be pan-poly too.
Well, so we were talking earlier about language and how we don't really have a good gender-neutral pronoun, right?
That's true.
I feel like there were some other things that came up before we started recording that was also like, God damn, language.
Yeah.
Do you remember what that was that we were talking about?
So I've struggled for a long time with the terms masculine and feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, they don't actually have any substantiation underneath them.
Interesting.
So masculine, we'll call Jace masculine and Emily feminine for this portion of the show.
Okay.
I'm offended for this portion of the show.
I'm not. I mean, my voice is not feminine at all, but that's about the only part of me that isn't.
Okay, all right, go on.
So Jace is wearing like a structured, tailored outfit and has short hair and some facial hair and speaks with a lower voice. Emily also does, but we'll leave that one out. Emily has long hair and wears, you know, smaller clothes that might show off more of your body and might be tighter and wear makeup and things like that. But those things don't mean vagina or penis in any sense of the word. And so when we talk about somebody being masculine, it means nothing about their gender or their sex, which is super interesting.
Sure.
But also, it annoys me because random things, like you even mentioned earlier about different languages, having, like, the computer is masculine, the table is feminine.
Right.
What the hell?
Yeah.
So it actually doesn't mean anything,
in my
opinion. Right. There's a socially accepted group of attributes that are masculine and that are feminine. And other than that, it doesn't actually have any substantiation. And so if you're not masculine or feminine, there are a couple of different words that we use, like androgynous.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a word that my other partner wanted me to bring in, which is epicene, which is essentially another word. It's an older word that actually is used to mean some not so nice things in some ways, but basically points to androgyny. So not being able to tell if you're a boy or a girl.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And so there are some older words that we have. But essentially, there's nothing to say, oh, this person's a blank, or this person is adverb. So it's hard to really point at people who aren't trying to gender themselves.
Sure, we have they and them. I see what you mean, that there's not, like, if we have these traits we say are masculine and we have these traits we say are feminine, we don't have, like, traits we say are...
Right. And so we just say that person's androgynous, but it's kind of like the word queer, where it doesn't point to anything.
Just points to a non...
And if you see a female-bodied person wearing non-gendered clothes, then they may say, like, that's a masculine feature.
Right.
Or they're trying to look masculine. Which is also which incorrect.
Is all offensive,
yeah,
also.
Yeah, exactly. Which is all just offensive.
Sure.
Well, and also, what are gender-neutral clothing? Is there any?
I mean, that's a great point.
Right.
I don't know if there is, really.
Yeah.
I feel like it's becoming more so, right? If you think about,
like a onesie?
I mean, I'll see a man in, like, leggings.
I think furries are gender-neutral.
There you go.
Furries are gender-neutral. That's true. Go. Good one. That's good awesome. One. No, but, like, I mean, just jeans, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
The jeans,
but
like,
the cut says everything.
That's true.
True.
But during our parents' generation, women. at least my parents, like, you know,
mine too. They're old.
My mom, like, had to wear a dress. Like, wearing pants was, like, scandalous, right? And if you think about, like, bloomers, right? I forget.
Was it the fear of accidental camel toe?
I don't know. No, but it was just that it was not feminine, yeah, right? That you had to uphold this ideal of femininity. Right, so I'd say jeans are becoming, but you're right. The cut totally
says everything. Yeah. I started wearing clothes from the boys and men's section a couple few years ago because they're better made and they're more comfortable.
Yes, they are better made.
They're cheaper.
Yeah. There's a lot of things about that, but I still have some items in my wardrobe that are from the women's section, but it also depends on how you wear it. And like if you're just going for an overall, like, sparkle pony rainbow extravaganza, it doesn't matter what you wear.
Right.
But in everyday society, you have to choose how you want people to see you.
Well, I mean, so if I can go back for a moment to this idea of masculine and feminine, that I think the other problem there is that those also, like, will sometimes talk about them as if they have clear definitions, but they actually don't, right? Like,
That's true of a lot of language, is we use words as placeholders for concepts that we pretend we have fully fleshed out or hardly defined, when in reality they're all kind of soft and ephemeral.
Right, or oftentimes language will make something that was soft and ephemeral and cause it to become concrete. Like the example for me that I find really fascinating is the idea of gay and straight, or homosexual and heterosexual, that up until just a few hundred years ago, like not even that long, we didn't have those words.
Yeah, interesting.
And so we also didn't have the concepts that went with them.
Yeah.
It was just like for example,
gay meant something else.
Well, right,
for,
right. I mean, that
a long time.
But just, I mean, the concept of identifying someone as a person who likes men or a person who likes women.
Yeah.
Is this different thing? So if you think about, like, biblical times, that maybe in your culture, if you were Jewish, you had laws about men laying with women and, you know, whatever. But it wasn't about, like, an identity. It was about a thing you did.
Yeah.
And then we invented these words a few hundred years ago, and all of a sudden it's an identity. Like, that being gay is a thing you can be rather than it's a thing you do to have sex with men.
Right.
Which is why there's a lot of other cultures, like, I know... you know, the ancient Greeks were kind of famous for this, but also, like, a lot of, you know, tribes in Africa and stuff like that were growing up, like, it's still expected that a man would pair with a woman and have children with her, but that growing up, he'd have sexual experiences with men, like, whatever, it didn't matter, right? Right? Like, the Greek and Roman soldiers would have crazy sex with each other, and, like, whatever. Mm-hmm. That didn't make you a thing. It was just a thing you were doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fascinating example of the opposite end of language.
That's absolutely true, and it actually, really quick, I'm going to go on a tangent that brings me to something that my therapist and I have been talking about. So the difference between guilt and shame is, like, guilt is about something that you did, shame is about something that you are. And I think that a lot of queer existence is like, I'm ashamed because I am a thing, which up until recently we didn't have a way to identify as, which I think is really interesting.
Wow, that's...
It was a quick and really, really deep and good tangent. Wow.
I love this. Oh,
yeah, I'll be thinking about that for a while.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think, Emily, you had the next question you wanted to ask.
So the next question, this is something that I had talked to Josh about recently, is that he asked, like, do you feel as though anyone in the poly community that you've dated or just dated in general has ever fetishized you because you are a bisexual person? And I kind of am throwing that over to you, if you've ever felt fetishized or stigmatized or anything because you identify as non-gender binary or just gender queer or queer in general, if people have... I don't know, that's proven difficult.
Yeah, so a few different things come from that.
Yeah.
I originally want to say that I think I was more fetishized as a bisexual girl growing up, certainly. And that's way before I knew that I was poly. And then also, I would say specifically within the queer community, there is a stigma against people fetishizing other people who are trans.
Yes.
Within the lesbian community, trans guys don't like to hang out, usually, because there's a lot of, like... what am I to you?
Yeah.
If you're interested in women, what are you doing with me? is this like a fetish thing? And one of my partners is a trans guy, and he goes through a lot of talking to people and weeding out those who are fetishizing him.
Yeah.
And so for me, I think being just like a generally queer human, I actually end up finding people who I'm more interested in dating and mm-hmm. who I have more in common with, mm-hmm. And end up dating people who are gender non-binary, trans, queer. I think everyone I date is queer. It'd be weird if they weren't.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We have one. Like, we have wait. One questioning.
Yeah. Right. What are you going for?
Yeah.
Here?
Yeah. As that person George likes to say, any way you look at me, it's a little gay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've actually like found that since I've started embracing my gender identity and mm-hmm. sexuality full-heartedly and not limiting myself, mm-hmm. I've found to be less fetishized and welcomed and actually seen.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of something that we've talked about a lot on the show, about the concept of being unapologetically poly,
mm-hmm.
and that a lot of people, especially when they're first becoming polyamorous, will try to kind of sugarcoat it or like ease other people into it that they're meeting or
I've
that
they're
dating. I've
always found that to be a mistake.
Totally.
Right. I have for myself. And the temptation is so real because you want people to like you. Right. But when you are just like fully that, like right from the get go, talking about your other partners, like making it very clear what your life is like and what that looks like, that the people that do get past that initial phase are going to be a lot better matches, and like mm-hmm. ultimately your time is going to be a lot better spent in more positive relationships. Well, it sounds like kind of a similar thing with really
queer.
You know, out and clear out and clear about your clear about the queer. Yeah. You know, clear about your gender identity or you know, or lack thereof, or however you want to define it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that gets mixed up with the phrase that I'm sure you guys are familiar with, the fuck your own species. I've heard that referred to a lot for poly. Like only like I know
I
know people including myself who will only date people who are poly.
Right. Yeah. Who already identify as that. Yeah.
Yeah. Just because I already have other partners and it would be a mess.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. No, I feel like I know a lot of people who go through phases of that.
Mm.
It's like, they'll be like, oh, fuck it, I'm swearing off anyone who's not already poly, and it'll last for, like, a while. And then they'll be like, okay, like, I kind of want to explore again, like, try it again, and they'll kind of go back and forth in that, like...
And I found that a lot of single people really don't care if you're casually dating them and you have other partners, because they're probably dating other people, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, again, to come
unless
back to gender.
Unless monogamy is the end goal.
Although, well,
to come
exactly.
back to gender, that's also something that varies depending on their gender.
That's a really good point.
And you know what? It's weird, actually. And this is just entirely anecdotal, based on myself and my friends and my partners and kind of all of our experiences. But that I would say right from the get-go that women, in our culture at least... let's assume like these are heterosexual pairings. Mm-hmm. That a woman with a man is more likely,
and right,
whatever,
is more likely to be like, no, like can't do that. Like that's I'm not comfortable with you dating other people, or kind of with this casual non-monogamy thing. Mm. Whereas men are more likely to be like, yeah, whatever, cool. But that the women who are like, okay. tend to have like a better, like a more even handle of it as it goes on. Whereas the men, it's like, yeah, I'm cool. And then there's this like spike in like, I can't fucking handle this. Like you have to stop this. Like I'm very jealous now.
Mm.
That it's like, there's like one deals with it earlier and one deals with it later or something. And this is based on like very cis, mostly straight, right? Like that
people,
kind of acculturation. I don't think it has anything to do with their sex, but purely to do with the way that we're culturally taught.
Yeah, which is, I would say, the biggest part of gender. And mm-hmm. I definitely had this conversation with my mom when I was first trying to, like, get into the water with her in talking about my gender.
Yeah.
Was like, yeah, so I grew up and you gave me a lot of pink things and I only played with boys and I asked for a blue bike. And, like, I just, you know, I think I was really trained to play with girls. Here's some dolls.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it doesn't matter if I liked those things or not. The other things weren't really an option to me. And I had to fight to be like on the street every day biking with my friends.
Yeah.
Right.
And whereas, and then that only like gets piled on top of each other as we start becoming sexual beings, as we start right. dating, and what's appropriate. It's okay for this boy to kiss a few girls, but it's not okay for those girls to have kissed that boy.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
so
no, it's just
that's
this
just
absurd cultural
bullshit.
Narrative we
yeah.
have. Yeah.
And so I think that just kind of piles on top of itself and mm-hmm. is shaped by our personal experiences that are less, you know, general mm-hmm. until we become adults, and then we wonder where is my gender? Where does it come from? And what actually am I versus right. what I've just been told I am?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. And they become so inextricably intermixed that God. That we can't really, you know, like when someone says like, no, this is just how I am. It's not how I was
yeah.
raised or how my culture taught me. It's like, how do you know?
How do parents?
Is there like, an essential self?
Right.
Well, like, that's the thing. Like, how do parents or culture or whatever? How does it not like? Fuck you up potentially in some way, because if your parents are only ever taught like, hey, I see a female in front of me, so I'm mm-hmm. going to give them female things,
mm-hmm.
I mean, how do we
and female
condition
rules and all of that.
Yeah, exactly, how do we condition ourselves out of that thought?
Yeah,
with intentionality many things can be achieved,
sure mm-hmm. yeah. because obviously if the three of us were to ever have children in the future, like the hope would be that not together.
Oh, that's great.
I'm sorry, I mean just like kids.
No, I'm so
well
happy.
It's actually yours, we yeah. just forgot to tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
Weird. I don't remember that. Cool.
I'm sure it was great. But no, I mean it, like hopefully, you know, we would raise children as very open individuals who mm-hmm. don't need to be told who they are, but mm-hmm. they get to decide who they are mm-hmm. and sex positive and all that stuff. But not everyone's going to do that.
Well, and also, I think there's a very specific thing where children like to rebel against their parents no matter how cool they are.
Right.
Sure, and that's cool.
So maybe they'll rebel.
That's always been my fear. If I do have a kid,
yeah.
which I'm not really interested in, but if yeah. I did have a kid, they would right. be a total right winger and I would yeah. just not know what to do.
God. That's horrifying.
Oh, man. Okay, so this brings us to our final section here.
Yes.
Our final couple sections. Yeah. Right, so in that vein, not about raising kids, but about ourselves, mm-hmm. I want to leave our listeners with kind of something that they can actually do mm-hmm. About this, and not about like, oh, you know, treat your non-gender binary friends better or something like that. Like, that's,
be nice.
Do that too.
Be better.
But in kind of an exercise of like discovering what gender means for you, I know you talked about this video that has yet to be published.
It will be soon, I promise.
Can't wait to
about
see
that, or, you know, kind of what's something that we could actually do that's sort of a quick thing to kind of get some insight into what gender means for us?
Yeah. Wow, that's a big question. I think that a really good way to learn about anything for me, but I come from a writing background, is mm-hmm. to sit down and write about it. So to question yourself and like, what are the things that I identify with and mm-hmm. why? I think that's really important. So I know that you said that you identified with some aspects of masculinity or maleness mm-hmm. that you enjoyed, right. and you were able to identify why. And then also some things that you identify with that have nothing to do with your sex or your gender. Mm-hmm. And to be able to build a more coherent picture of an individual rather than an ex. Like, rather than a boy or a girl or...
Right. Like, the definition of me is some of these
beyond
things
these
rather
boxes.
Than just I'm in a box.
Yeah, right. rather than so, checking out boxes, right. like, write in your answer.
Right. Like, write your own definition of kind of what things make up who you are.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like that.
I think that would be informative for a lot
I'm
of people.
I'm a big fan of writing exercises, so I like that this is a writing-based
Consider
one.
It your homework.
But
it.
Also, definitely ask, instead mm-hmm. of assuming pronouns, ask, like,
certainly.
Hey, mm-hmm. what would you like to be called or
I mean,
identify as?
Yeah, and in the queer communities that I run in, mm-hmm. a lot of times if you're meeting someone new, they'll automatically say, hey, I'm Tate, they, them.
Yeah.
Right.
And then that's it.
That's
right.
awesome.
But if you come into a conversation and you see someone that seems cool and you want to comment on what they said, you just say like, hey, I didn't catch your name or your pronouns.
Right.
And to
that's
me,
cool.
I learned about like... So I learned about consent, but I started really learning about consent like a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the most revolutionary piece of that was realizing that I should ask people if they wanted a hug.
Hmm.
Sure. Yeah.
And so
yeah,
that
yeah.
is such like a normal social thing that people don't think about.
Yep.
But starting to do that has spurred a lot of questions about consent.
Mm-hmm.
But also like asking for pronouns, people are like, why would you ask my pronouns? It's like, oh, because I didn't know. I didn't want to assume. I didn't want to assume you'd want a hug. I didn't want to assume what your pronouns
right.
are.
Right. So, it's all part of this same, like, not assuming that...
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Cool. Okay. And then our famous final question.
The final question
is, I'm going to keep this focused like primarily on polyamory for this one.
Yeah.
And if you could just give one piece of advice to someone who is new to polyamory, what would that be?
Ooh. Okay. So the thing that I've gained the most from being poly is learning to go against every instinct in my body that's trying to hold in a secret, that's trying to hold in a feeling or a statement about myself to my partner, or that's trying to hold in, like, I didn't like it when you did that, whatever it was, even if it didn't have anything to do with somebody else.
Right.
So, like, my body tends to, like, really just, like, want to lock in those feelings and not share them because that's vulnerable,
right.
even though you have, that's the only way to get your needs met. And so my advice to anybody who's new to poly is to get comfortable with that feeling and learn how to go against it.
Wow. That's
be
very
vulnerable.
Cool.
Yeah. That's lovely. Very cool.
Of just saying what's going on, even if that seems...
Like the world is going to end and I'm just going to implode.
Right. Right. Wow. All right. Well, thank you so much, Tate.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Thank you.
Yes.
Nice to... No, I didn't meet you just now. I didn't.
Don't brag.
Sorry.
So could you tell our listeners where they could find your writing or more stuff about you?
Yes, you can go to TateAshley.com and find my writing and my art.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. We will see you next week, and we also hope to see you on our tour.
Heck, yes.
Like, seriously... So excited.
And
so
I think
Dedeker
will be back in
person.
The next episode.
Yes, Dedeker will be back next
Unless
week.
She bails out for some other reason.
Wow.
I'm kidding.
Harsh.
I'm kidding.
Wow,
nothing. Harsh. She's like, having a nice time. It's fine.
Are you jealous of the silence?
No, I'm just jealous of the time off that she gets to spend
yeah.
doing things.
All right. Thank you. We'll see you next week.
Bye. Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Farewell.